Welcome to the X-Men Task Podcast, the X-Men 97 years. My name is Willie Simpson.
My name is Sonia Rappaport.
Sonia, we have a strange bifurcated podcast this week. Episode 4, Motendo / Life Death Part 1. This was a little bit shocking when we threw on the episode this morning, right?
Yeah, a little bit.
Because the episode, we wrote down the episode title as we're taking our notes, and then the episode begins, it just says Motendo. And we're like, what about Life Death Part 1? But then it turned out it appeared halfway through the episode.
Right. It was really like a series of two vignettes, and I was kind of thinking like, oh, maybe they come together in the second, because this is Part 1, so maybe right. Like next week they would come together and the storylines would kind of like merge. But then as we were watching like the Motendo,
that was a clear ending. Yeah.
Is kind of finished. So then next week is going to be just Life Death, maybe?
I believe so. And then maybe they'll do another sort of two-part episode.
Oh, yeah, maybe.
I mean, they're just fitting the Storm Forge stuff. Maybe it's just more of a background story that they want to highlight in a different way. I don't know. They took a different format approach this week, and I liked it because it reminded me of classic comics where they would just sort of, they wouldn't necessarily have the cliffhanger or a story end at the end of a comic. A lot of times you would get the new month's comic and the story would end in the middle of the comic from the previous month. Mm-hmm. And then a new story would begin in that same comic. Mm-hmm. To me, most famously, remembering the introduction of Silver Surfer in Fantastic Four, where the Fantastic Four are picking up and finishing a story that ends like halfway through. And then in the middle of the comic, they just, Jack and Stan start a new story with Silver Surfer. He comes flying in and, you know, the Galactus story begins.
Right.
So, and the X-Men did it a lot too, I believe. Chris Claremont stories were overstuffed and he would also just begin like brand new like ideas in the middle of a comic book.
Did they have like a page quota? Was it just like, oh, yeah, we're going to just tell the stories in however long it takes to tell them?
No, there was a page quota.
Okay.
I forget if it was like 25 or 30 pages. There's like a standard amount, especially in those eras when comics were a lot more like about selling monthly rack titles.
Right, yeah.
I feel like now it's like the business of comic books has changed so much that they hire, you know, writers and artists to sort of conceive of big stories and tell them in a way that they could eventually sell them as graphic novels. Mm. So whether or not like they still hold to those like monthly spinner rack standards, I don't really know. You don't really see comics sold to spinner racks anymore. I mean, that business model doesn't really exist anymore. So,
right.
I mean, I guess you can go to a Barnes & Noble maybe and pick up some loose comics. I mean, obviously, comic book stores still exist, although they're dwindling. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, I think most people who still buy monthly comics, they order them directly. Mm. You know, so it's just like an entirely different reality, which is sad because it would be cool every time we'd go to our local grocery if there's just like a rack of comics like when they still had them when we were kids. Mm-hmm. It existed in the 90s. So that's something interesting, a little different here. Before we talk about that, first let me dispense with the plugs. You can follow me on Twitter, Blue Sky Threads, at Willie Simpson. Join the X-Men Task Podcast, Facebook, and Reddit groups. A lot of new members this week, which is very exciting.
Yeah, welcome everyone.
The community really overflowing with people interacting and everyone having a grand old time talking about X-Men. You can also leave us a nice 5-star review on iTunes if you enjoy the show. We appreciate everyone who does just that. And last but not least, if you really want to help us out, you can donate to our Buy Me a Coffee website. Again, totally voluntary, but we are deeply thankful for everyone who does that. This week, we have a new donator, Josh.
And maybe a new listener.
Yeah, I think he's a relatively new listener because he was talking about in his donation how he's, you know, he discovered our show and he's going through the back archive and he's very excited. And Josh, we're very excited too. Thank you so much for the 5 coffees you gave us. We'll be well caffeinated.
I really need that, yes.
Yeah, Sonia especially. I worked in a coffee shop and I had to give up drinking coffee because I was just overloaded on free coffee. Like right after college, I had that job at a Borders, the now defunct Borders, when I was 22.
Ruined coffee for you, huh?
It really did ruin coffee. I was so over-caffeinated every day. One day I said, you know, I can't live like this anymore.
Well, I continue to live like this. But you do drink tea, so
yeah.
It's called Buy Me a Coffee, but it's Buy Me a Beverage, really.
Very fair. Well, the tea is decaffeinated, I want to say. So thank you, Josh. Thank you to everyone else. Before we talk about this episode, too, I wanted to touch on briefly the tragic passing of Ed Piskor.
Yes.
This is an insane story. So I got a text message from one of my friends, Jeff, who is a huge, I would dare call him a comics historian. He says, did you hear what happened to Ed Piskor? And this was like 2 days ago. And I said, no. And in the back of my mind, I had noticed that Comic Book Kayfabe, the YouTube web series, which I'm subscribed to, which Ed hosted, stopped updating, which is so weird because they are like the model of consistency. Every day of the week, they had a new video, which is absurd. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's just one of those things where you just like kind of like, wait, where's Comic Book Kayfabe? And then it turns out, like all at once, I learned this insane story where Ed had been accused by someone of sending some like inappropriate DMs. Someone was like a 17-year-old woman or young girl, and she called him a creep on social media. And then some articles started appearing in the underground, sort of like a scene that covers independent comic artists, of which Ed is a part, forefront leader in. And, you know, he took it very badly. And then he just decided that his life was over and he committed suicide.
Yeah.
Which is just like, it was just like a stunning amount of information to absorb in such a short amount of time. Now, it's not to excuse anything Ed did or was accused of. I mean, and who knows, like fully what the full context was. There's a lot you could explore about the story online yourself. Like, you know, like, let's just get this part of the way. Like, let's say he was a little creepy. You know, fair enough. Like, he didn't, act on these texts. He didn't sleep with this you know, teenager at the time. He just sent her some raunchy texts, and that was the end of it. It was during COVID. You know, it was bad. But the point is, like, he didn't need to die over it. You know? Yeah, like, his life didn't need to end over this. He needed to apologize and have, like, a frank, you know, like, on-video conversation about, like, listen, I did something that was a little off base here. I'm going to learn from this. Maybe I'll take a break for a few months, and I'll be back and just, like, get my priorities straight, you know? I think from Ed's point of view, because he wrote a very detailed, like, insanely sad and dark suicide note where he talked about, like, you know, I had a $75,000 contract for a new comic book that got canceled. I believe there's going to be some adaptation of some of his works. There's like discussion of a movie or something. Like, he had a lot going that got like ended almost immediately. And Ed, if you know Ed, which a lot of us do, because he has just been a presence if you like watch Comic Book Kayfabe, it's like a daily presence in your life every day as just one of the leading voices on comic books and comic book history and the art form of comic books. Like, you know, this crushed him. Like, his life is comic book. So, I think from his point of view, it was hard to imagine him, like, giving up being a comic book artist and starting a new career, you know, like, getting out of the business. And that's what I feel like he probably felt he was being forced into that corner.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I guess I don't want to keep belaboring this, but it's just an insane tragedy. It's just something where it was really sad. You know, I watch this guy all the time personally. I bought his comic books, especially his X-Men Grand Design comics, which are amazing. His partner, Jim Rugg, is like his co-host on the show too, has amazing comics as well. They're both incredible comic artists. And like, maybe like the two of them are the most passionate number one fans of comic books that ever lived, perhaps. And this whole thing happening is just so dark and upsetting to me that I needed to talk about it here. I just had to mention, you know, like, I thought about not talking about it, but I don't know. This guy was an incredible human being, and he's not perfect, obviously. You know, you could judge him however you want if you don't know much about him, but if you knew him, I think you would like be fairly in the camp of like he just fucked up a little bit and, you know, like needed to just sort of apologize and deal with it on like a sort of like a regular level as opposed to taking it to like an extreme.
Yeah.
My life has to end now.
I mean,
now.
You don't know, like, what else he was going
right.
through, though. Like, it could have been kind of like, you know, the last straw for him or something like that. Who knows?
Yeah.
But it is very sad, just, like, loss of life that didn't need to happen, so.
Yeah. So I feel awful for Ed, for Jim, for the comic book kayfabe community, for his family, for everyone that, you know, knew him, which there's a lot of people. I mean, all I could suggest is that you know, check out the Comic Book Kayfabe channel, which is still up there. They didn't take it down. And, like, you could search there. Look, just start searching in that archive for X-Men stuff, if that's the way you want to, like, you know, get into, like, understanding. Like, that's how I got hooked in. Like, I just randomly saw one day a video of, like, hey, they're talking about X-Men number one. Like, from the, and they just go through it page by page. And they like no detail escaped them. They are full on like brilliant historians and like with a lot of cool style and wit when they talk about comics. And it's such a bummer. I mean, one of the latest videos I saw him do was he was a little bit of a troll, Ed, and he had like a video saying it's the video title was literally which is worse, Madam Web or X-Men 97? And I was like all geared up to be angry. You know, like I was like, what the fuck, Ed? Like, how can you not like X-Men 97? And he was totally faking. He's like, no, I love X-Men 97. It's great. And he was so excited about it. And he talked about the first couple of episodes, which he saw, and he was really pumped. He's like, this is a show made for like me and my generation, for my audience. They're going doing deep cut stuff, you know. Mm-hmm. Ed reviewed, X-Men like a coffee table book, which we have too, from Eric and Julia Leewald as well, which had all the art and stuff. He loved that kind of stuff. He loved all the, like the Batman Task stuff with Bruce Timm. I mean, so much of like the stuff I just randomly say on this podcast where I'm talking about history, I just picked up from comic book kayfabe. So whatever, maybe we'll talk more about this in the future. I just needed to say, you know, RIP Ed, and I hope you're in a better place. It's really sad. So
yeah,
I don't know. That one hit me pretty hard.
I know.
All right, Sonia, how does this episode begin?
Okay, well, first, I guess we'll talk about the opening theme song.
Right.
Because they're changing out some of the scenes every single week. So along the way here, we get a glimpse of Jubilee fighting Mojo with Longshot is one of them. Mm-hmm. We see X-Factor with Forge, Polaris, Iceman, Havoc.
That was cool. Like a nice throwback to those two episodes.
Mm-hmm. And then we also get Professor X facing off against the Hellfire Club.
Right. They keep showing you that Professor X, they're keeping his memory alive in the opening credits at least.
Yeah, he's coming back, I think.
Yeah, oh, for sure. I'd forgotten about that episode. I think it's from season 5. It might be a late season 4 one where Jubilee fights Mojo with Longshot.
Mm-hmm.
I only really remember the classic Mojo episode from season 3. Was it the end of season 2? Yeah, right, yeah. Jubilee. Because at first I was like, Jubilee wasn't in that Mojo episode where they all fight, you know, in like these like movie parodies, fight to the death there. That would have been a little too dark. But Longshot comes back and Jubilee helps him. So she is familiar with the world of Mojo. And I'm enjoying the way they're integrating like classic episodes into the opening credits here. It's a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
So the episode begins and they're just, at first, as we said, we were thrown off by, it's just titled Motendo.
Right. And we were like, oh, what happened to the other half of it?
Right.
This opening scene is a little bit funny because the X-Men, first you just see Rogue and Gambit sitting down to have coffee, like breakfast in the morning. There's like a tray of muffins on the table, and Gambit's offering to like help Rogue make her coffee or whatever, and Magneto's at the table too, and he's like, oh, I've got it, and he brings over 3 spoonfuls of sugar and puts it in her coffee.
You know, I'm really starting to think this whole Magneto-Rogue romance is a big fake-out.
Uh-huh.
They're really teasing it in a way. Because Rogue is, there's something too friendly about Rogue with her relation to Gambit. Like, Rogue knows Gambit loves her.
Yeah, they're in love with each other.
Yeah, I just don't, I get it that.
But she can touch Magneto.
Right, and they did hint that they had some kind of romance in the past, which we never saw in the original series.
Yeah.
But that said, I don't think it means that they're, like, in a full-on relationship now, necessarily.
I don't know.
It just seems like it's all being set up where it's going to be like Return of the Jedi, where Leia tells Han that Luke's my brother,
right?
Kind of thing.
Yeah.
I mean, Magneto's not related to Rogue, but you know what I mean? It's going to be something like that, like where she's like, I wasn't sleeping with Magneto, Gambit. You're the one I love, you idiot. Like, it's going to be something like that.
Mm.
I just get that sense.
It could be. Anyway, zoom out, and all the rest of the X-Men are at the table, too.
Right.
Having their, like, morning meeting or breakfast together or something. And Magneto's like, all right, today everyone's going to the Danger Room. We got a lot to prepare for. Time to go. And Rogue's like, well, but it's Jubilee's 18th birthday. Like, I wonder what she wants to do to celebrate.
Given Jubilee's age is fun.
Yeah.
I always assumed in the original series she was 15. That was my take.
For 5 years, she was 15.
Yeah, for 5 years, she was definitely 15.
Uh-huh, yeah.
You're right, I guess. No, maybe she was in season 1, and they kind of, you know, the way that
slowly aged her.
Slowly aged her to 18. It's an interesting choice, too, because they're you know, she's technically an adult now.
Right.
So I wonder if it's a way of them being able to put her in a little bit more dangerous situations.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she's been in many dangerous situations, but they're sort of, I feel like they're upgrading her character a little bit.
But they're also giving her romance, so maybe they want her to be, like, of age.
Yeah.
You know, for that.
Yeah, that's a good point, too. So it's Jubilee's 18th birthday. It's a fun factoid.
Yeah.
And for her birthday, she wants to go to the arcade.
Magneto shuts down that idea. He's like, absolutely not. Like, if we, Jubilee, if you want to, like, live to fight another day, you got to practice in the danger room. And she's, of course, very upset about this. So, her and Sunspot retreat to her room, and she's having, like, it's a flashback sort of to, like, all the classic X-Men episodes where they're always telling her she has to stay behind and she can't, like, join the team and she can't do adult stuff. And she's having a little bit one of those, like, teenage tantrum where she's like, it's not fair, you know?
Yeah.
And then she, like, notices that there's a Motendo.
Which, in her room, all plugged in and set up. And obviously, you know, play on Nintendo. And it's got an X-Men cartridge in it, which she doesn't really notice. But the cartridge looks like the classic Sega Genesis cartridge of the X-Men game, of which we use the theme music for this podcast.
Mm-hmm. And have spent many hours playing at my dad.
Right. Yeah, you were way better at that game than I was. Did you beat that game?
I don't think so.
You never beat it as
no.
a kid? My best friend, shout out to Michael Heinrich from when I was a kid. He had that game and he beat it. It was unbelievable watching him get through that game. Because that game was so difficult to me. Especially when you get past the Juggernaut level, which is basically level one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could beat, what's her name, Lilandra's sister.
Uh-huh.
But after that, like, I would just always die. And it was like, there's a bit of a maze aspect to it.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about the game many times in the past. It was a great...
No, it was like equal parts fun and frustrating because the controls just like weren't sensitive enough for what you really wanted them to do a lot of times.
You needed a lot of fine control of the characters, but it looked great though, and it had a great soundtrack.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. It was fun anyway.
It was a lot of fun, and just like the way they like loaded in the cameos of other X-Men where you couldn't really use them, but they were there as like bonuses.
Yeah, that was fun.
Like Jean Grey would lift you up if you fell off a cliff.
Right.
You'd call on Rogue or Storm to help you in any scene.
Archangel could come through and like help wipe out some bad guys.
Right.
Anyways.
Jubilee just accepts that this console is in her room.
Well, she's like, oh, the X-Men said that maybe there were going to be some surprises for me today for my birthday. She's like, I bet that this is from them.
Right. But then something super dark and cyberpunk happens where the console comes to life and shoots a million wires at Roberto and Jubilee and they get sort of like horribly...
ensnared.
Yeah, jacked into the Motendo... game console.
And then when they wake up, they're just like in like downtown or wherever.
Downtown New York City. They have no idea how they got there. They think it's real life at first.
There's a sentinel coming at them that they have to fight first. And like Jubilee manages to fight the sentinel like aptly.
She can't just, you know, I thought it was interesting to see what extent of power she would have. She can't blow it up with her fireworks.
Right.
She does what she's been doing in the animated series. She just sort of like blasts it and it gets stunned.
Right. She can subdue, but, like, that's about it. And she says to Roberto, like, why don't you, like, use your powers? That would be really helpful right now. And he's like, oh, no, absolutely not. If I get caught on camera and my parents see it, like, no, that's not going to happen.
I like this aspect of Roberto's character.
Yeah.
He's very coy about using these incredible powers he has.
But he's using, like, garbage can lids as, like, a shield against them. And then this payphone in the distance starts ringing. It's kind of like in The Matrix.
Right, yeah.
And Jubilee's like, no, it could be a trap. And he's like, a payphone trap? That makes no sense. So he answers it. It's kind of a trap, I guess. They, like, get transported into the next level of the video game,
right,
I guess,
yeah.
Which is the Savage Land.
Right.
Genosha.
Right, Genosha. The Slave Island episode.
Right, and she's like, oh, it's Genosha, but it's in the past, actually, because, like, there's all, like, the enslaved mutants. You see
Thunderbird, Blob, Sunfire from those episodes.
Right, they're all, like, moving heavy rocks and stuff like that with their power-subduing collars on.
Right. And then we, you know, they get to the big reveal, which is not that much of a surprise, which is Mojo is back, now voiced by David Arrigo. A slightly different take on the voice.
Actually, wait, before we even get to that, they're getting like shot at, the two of them, while they're in Genosha.
Oh, right, yeah.
And they get saved by some kind of like cyberpunk character that they don't know who she is and they can't like access her.
Right, they've got a guardian angel that's looking out for them throughout the course of this episode.
And this is the moment where Jubilee realizes that they're in the video game, which we knew, the viewer knew already, but...
Right. You
know. Anyway, yes, then Mojo shows up.
Right, he starts explaining that like, oh, you know, the X-Men were my greatest hit and the ratings have plummeted and... He explains like a bit like how his dimension works, where he's got this entire enslaved dimension that, but his whole power comes from his TV ratings. It's always a little bit confusing with Mojo. I mean, as we talked in the Mojo episodes, his whole character is just like a weird commentary on Hollywood and the entertainment business, and it's just like a big metaphor for that.
Mm-hmm.
But he's still a lot of fun. And he's also looks a little different in this opening scene.
Julie's like, have you lost weight? He's like, yes.
He says, I got a lot of work done, like a nip and a tuck here and there.
Uh-huh.
It doesn't like look any better. He looks equally horrifying monster.
A strong element of the grotesque when it comes to Mojo.
Yeah. He's basically a demon of some kind. And, you know, he explains that Jubilee, you're the star of, like, he says, like, you know, what's hot now is video games. It's like the latest cutting edge in mind memory. And Jubilee, you're the star of my game. And it's based on your memories.
He like briefly mentions that there was some mishap with Dazzler, which is kind of funny.
Oh, yeah.
Like her game didn't work out. He says something like that. And then he introduces X-Men, The Rise of Jubilee. And like the game starts in like a 16-bit style.
Someone has to make this game.
Yeah, this would be awesome.
Some cool computer artist has to go out there and like whip together, you know, a nice little half an hour long game.
Right.
And run through these levels. It'd be a lot of fun.
We also see, though, that Jubilee's reaction to this isn't as like horrified as it should be, because it's like she knows that the conceit of this game is that if you die in the game, you die in real life, just like in the classic X-Men series.
Yeah.
But she also is kind of into it because she's the star of the show. And her character is so, like, used to being pushed aside and not given her, like, full due.
She also has a little bit of, like, growing up angst where she just doesn't want to live in the real world. She wants to live in a fantasy.
Yeah.
And this is, like, an outlet for her to live out her wildest dreams.
Right. So she likes the escapism of, like, the video game aspect of it. And she also really likes that she's the star of it.
Yeah. So she's into it. Roberto is not impressed.
He also, like, hates video games.
Yeah. And Jubilee says, the only people that hate video games are the people that are bad at them. Which I don't know if that's true exactly, but whatever. I get Roberto's point here. Or I get Jubilee's point. So then a montage begins of, like, they're in a video game. It's a 16-bit world. In the first level, they're fighting Sentinels. And, again, it looks like the classic X-Men fighting arcade game that we all know and love. And like, you know, we see like this montage go on. There's a few levels where in the second level, she's fighting Sauron in the Savage Land.
Mm-hmm.
Mojo, his sort of like nip tuck surgery doesn't work. And he just sort of puffs out as a big fat guy again,
mm-hmm.
which is a crazy bit of animation. Jubilee's losing health along the way. But she's being helped out. Like, she gets some health back via this, like, cyberpunk angel that's helping her.
Right. She doesn't know that it's her necessarily. And, like, they try to maintain a little bit of mystery about, like, how the help is coming to her. But
right.
And also, Mojo is getting help on the sidelines because our old friend Spiral is there.
Right. A great character, Spiral.
Mm-hmm.
She's, like, trying to do counter hacking right. with all her arms. Spiral's a lot of fun to see her, like, just working for Mojo, working all those machines.
Uh-huh.
We don't really get to see her do her spiral dance, though, in
That's
this
right.
episode, which I would have liked to see. The next episode is Asteroid M, and Roberto gives a little bit more backstory on, like, what Asteroid M is, like, Magneto's base that caused a lot of fear on Earth. And he explained how he had to lie to his parents saying that he hates mutants when the Asteroid M controversy happened when he was a little bit younger,
mm-hmm.
To, like, throw them off the scent that he, in fact, is a mutant. And then Roberto is like, he's sort of, Jubilee's still having fun, but Roberto's like, listen, you need to like snap out of this. We need to escape and you need to grow up. And she doesn't want to hear it. But then at that moment he gets smacked by like a flying, like Magno ball from the Magneto end boss here. Mm-hmm. And it's Magneto in his like classic costume, but he's got glowing red video game eyes.
And Jubilee's like, all right, this is classic, like, end boss.
Well, then it says game over for Roberto, too, so he might be dead.
Almost. He's, like, blinking.
Right, yeah.
She's like, oh, gosh, like, he's dying. I have to save him. I don't know what I'm going to do, but I just have to wait out the cycle of, like, Magneto's end boss attacks.
Right. Magneto, an almost impossible character to beat if you got to that level in the X-Men Genesis video game.
Right. But she does manage to win against Magneto. She like charges up all her fireworks and blasts him, and it's enough, surprisingly.
And then she sees in the corner of her eye, there's like a glowing green X logo on the floor. And she's like, oh, that must be a one-up. I need to get Roberto to this. And it's provided from the Guardian Angel hacker character.
Right. So she gets it to Roberto. He's revived. He's like, oh my God, was I dead? And then Mojo appears and like it's about to be like game over for real, but then a huge hand.
Right. They're going to fight Mojo. Well, no, is this where, no, they don't fight Mojo just yet. Right.
Because this huge hand appears in the sky and like scoops Jubilee and Roberto up, and takes them into some like back cyberspace.
Yeah. Some cyber world nether place.
And we find out.
Remind me of Wreck-It Ralph or something.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. We find out that the mysterious helper is actually, like, an old Jubilee.
Right. Looking pretty cool with gray hair.
Right.
And just as sassy as young Jubilee.
Right. She has her Jubilee earrings on. I don't know if I ever realized that those earrings, it's like a red circle with a line through the middle.
Yeah.
I don't know if I ever realized that it says Jubilee.
I don't think you ever saw that in the original cartoon. I don't think they ever got to that level of detail.
They, like, zoom in enough on young and old Jubilee to show that, like, they both have the same earrings that say her name. Yeah. I was like, that's an insane choice to just wear your name on your earrings.
I think that was part of girls' fashion in the 90s, was just have your name on jewelry and stuff.
Right. Oh, yeah, that's true. There were, like, necklaces and rings.
I think even guys, too, had them.
Oh, yeah.
Never really, a kid's named Tony.
They were never, like, ostentatious, like, red.
Well, she got some custom work, you know. She got some cool earrings.
Custom jewelry,
maybe. Yeah, or maybe she made them herself.
Anyway.
I'm all about Jubilee. There's so many people that hate Jubilee. I love the character. Always have, always will.
I mean, like, she's kind of, like, bratty and self-centered and immature. So, like, they don't make her likable all the time.
Yeah.
So I can see why people dislike her sometimes. But also, those are very, like, realistic and relatable, especially for a children's cartoon.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean,
like her, too.
I related to the time and place of the character, just being, a mall rat. I mean, she's, like, I remember our pal George was telling us that I think he said that like she's like the character from Terminator, you know, like the young kid that grows up to invent the resistance or whatever. His name is escaping me, but she's like that too, you know, like hanging out in arcades and being a bit of a misfit. I don't know. I like the whole aesthetic. So and then I thought this was good. I thought the storyline was going to be that this old Jubilee was. She was captured from some other dimension. She was just another alternate dimension Jubilee that Mojo had captured. And he's talking about, oh, there's a bunch of beta testers for this game, and I'm the only one that survived. But I think she in herself is a digital creation.
She explains that Mojo created, like, many replicas of Jubilee to kind of, like, test out the game for audiences or whatever. And she's the only one that managed to survive through all the levels.
Right. I thought it was going to be some dark reveal of, like, he's captured Jubilees from many dimensions. And I'm the only one that lived. And I'm trying to get back home somehow and escape.
No, she's just a digital creation.
Right. She's pretty cheery.
She, like Jubilee, has like a firm love of video games and they kind of like bond over it. And she also shows Jubilee. I guess because she's lived like a lot of years with her power set, she's kind of like upgraded what her powers can do. Kind of like how we've been talking about that, like Cyclops' powers are not only what they appear to be, but he can use them in different and creative ways to do a bunch of different stuff. Same. So,
and it's awesome. I love this.
Talk about like the aesthetic. Like the aesthetic here is so like fun.
Yes. I mean, she could use her powers to be like Iceman a little bit and sort of skate along the floor in interesting ways. And, you know,
she can make like circular saws on each of her hand using the power. So it's like spinning firework blades almost.
And it was always implied with Jubilee too, that she was young and that her powers would get more dangerous as she got older.
Right. And also that she like hones them
better. Exactly. So, I mean, like people always like bag on Jubilee for being like, weak and all, but it's like, that's not the point. The point is that one day you know, she's shooting plasmoid fireworks out of her hands. They're going to be deadly at some point. And so this is a sort of like a final version Jubilee power set wise, and it's a lot of fun. So then now they have to fight Mojo. Mojo crawls, like, finds his way into this area, and they have to fight him. And there's like a great action sequence where the two Jubilees sort of combine their powers and like make a mega explosion that almost explodes Mojo from the inside out.
Right.
But she's kind of cooked a little bit.
Right. While they're doing that, though, also we see Roberto use his powers. Oh, okay. Finally, he like makes a massive explosion
right
into Mojo. It's not enough to kill him or whatever. Like, so the two Jubilees kind of like finish the job, but you do see his like spotting arm and like the huge explosion that he makes.
Right. It's a cool animation sequence. The all using of the powers. I mean, like, all the rainbow stuff. It reminded me of last week's with the Madeline Pryor, like, shooting all the stained glass at Magneto. They're really going for, like, cool color blasts
in
these episodes. I really do enjoy the animation style of the show. And
yeah, again, like, this big action sequence is definitely, like, helped a lot by CGI. But, like, I don't mind it here. I know that they do, like, a combination of hand-drawn and CGI in these episodes.
Right.
But, like, they use both to great effect, so.
And,
cool.
Right. And similar to the last time, well, the last few times, or one of the times we saw Mojo anyway, at the very end, Spiral, like, takes some joy in screwing Mojo over.
Right. So here at the end, like, you know, Mojo is blasted out of that universe. He's back in his, like, control room.
Yeah.
Or whatever. And Spiral's there next to him, and he's kind of, like, out of it, and she just pushes him over.
Yeah. And she, like, winks at the camera. I remember in the first Classic Mojo episode, she just sort of helps the X-Men at the very end, and she's sort of like an ally of Longshot.
Mm-hmm.
And they've got some kind of romance going on, and so she ends. She's not...
It's kind of like, oh, working for Mojo is just my day job. I don't really believe in this stuff.
Yeah, yeah. So back, Jubilee and Roberto are back in her bedroom. And there's a bit of romance here where Jubilee takes the initiative and kisses Roberto, and they have a passionate kiss together.
Right, yeah.
And whenever she's made, you know, we saw her before when she's dancing with him, like the fireworks go all around her. And now when she's kissing him, the fireworks explode around her a little bit too. So.
Yeah. At that final scene where they're fighting Mojo, like in that cyberspace or whatever, old Jubilee says something about how the two of them are lovebirds.
Oh,
something.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, okay. I don't know if that was like 100% established, but it's more just that they're like interested in each other.
Yeah.
But then I was like, oh, maybe that's like, I don't know, she knows something. I guess that doesn't make sense.
It doesn't quite make, yeah, because she talks about when she's convincing Jubilee that it's not worth it living in a video game. She's like, there's more important real things out there like love and family.
And hope.
And hope. And it's, but your digital character, it's a little.
Like, how do you know that?
A little confused. But again, you know, it's sort of lighthearted. It's fine.
Yeah.
So now, and that's the end of Mojo, what is it called? Motendo. And now we cut to Life Death Part 1.
And the video game cartridge is all melted at the end.
Oh, yeah. Unfortunately, she can't play again.
Unfortunately.
I wonder if that ever happened to any kid in real life where they played their, you know, their console hardware from the 90s so hard it, like, melted or caught on fire or something.
Yeah.
I bet, like, some kid's got an urban legend about that out there somewhere. And so, yeah, again, the format of this episode a little strange where it's just they cram in two little mini-sodes together. And they're taking the title right here from the, you know, the classic Claremont storylines from the 80s, where we see like a bit of Storm's quest of like, who is she now that she's lost her powers, and she meets Forge, and there's like a budding romance begins to form. That's sort of the premise.
So when we open up, she's in Forge's house. He's kind of like taken her in, and he made dinner for her. Bison stew or something.
Some kind of chili. Yeah.
His grandfather's recipe or something. And she like is really like touched by his kindness in like taking her in and caring for her.
And they do sort of answer the criticism we had last week where we're like, the X-Men know Forge, and it is like they do enough to hint that they do know Forge in this episode. Mm-hmm. Like they hadn't, like, he's not totally unknown to them because they show, like, again, in the opening credits, they remind you that the X-Men had met Forge and X-Factor in an episode in season 3 with Iceman. And then also, like, later, Forge talking about his past work with the government and stuff. It's like, enough is there that it's not like he's just this brand new guy that appears.
He also has, like, pictures on his wall.
Right.
The X-Men. Like, Storm wasn't present at the time. She's not in the pictures.
Yeah, not so, that
like, they
picture.
Never actually like met in this continuity.
No, I think they did. I think she was in that episode. I could be wrong. I don't know. It was like, no, maybe it was like Beast. It was like Beast, Wolverine and Cyclops fought X-Factor. Jubilee was there as well, too, I think. Mm-hmm. I don't know if Storm was in that fight, but I think Storm was aware.
Okay.
It doesn't matter.
I mean, in the pictures on his wall, she's not present.
Right, because it's a picture just of X-Factor.
Right.
Yeah.
Anyway, he makes her dinner, and he's kind of like explaining about his powers to her, because she asks him briefly about his past, because he has like the metal hand and metal leg.
Yeah, and he says he was a soldier. I'm assuming Vietnam. Yeah, definitely Vietnam. I think at the time Forge was created in the comics, he was clearly a Vietnam veteran.
Mm-hmm. And he says, like, oh, well, I can get into the parts of the brain that are dormant. It's kind of like a million Rubik's Cubes working at once or something. And she's like, or you're just a genius. That's not necessarily, like, power. but
I mean, it is his mutant power. I mean, his genius is so far beyond... Again, it's like you wonder where Forge sits on the Marvel hierarchy of geniuses, because there's quite a few, obviously. There's Iron Man, Mr. Fantastic, Beast is up there somewhere, and Forge definitely fits in the mix. I mean, it's almost like these genius things present contradictions, because Mr. Fantastic's whole thing is like he can never figure out a way to cure Ben Grimm of his rockiness, but... Why not call it Forge? He might be able to come up with a machine to cure him.
Right. I mean, it's not necessarily like a hierarchy of intelligences. It's like there are many different kinds of intelligences.
And there's evil intelligences with like Dr. Doom. And
right. They each have like different areas of strength, I guess.
And it's all storytelling bullshit, too. It's like, it's not the fact that like...
One is actually smarter than the other.
Right. That, like, you know, Forge could save Ben Grimm, but Mr. Fantastic can't. It's just all based on whatever story they're telling.
Right. We need Ben Grimm to stay the thing. So that's why he's not cured.
And I think Mr. Fantastic had cured him multiple times. And the story is always like either Ben Grimm's like, you know what? I want to be the thing. Uh-huh. Or, you know, it's just something happened where he had to make a choice where he's like, you know, I have to become the thing to save my friends. And but it means you can never go back. And he always makes the heroic sacrifice. Yeah. But then they, I think they did eventually make a big point of like, he's fully comfortable in his own rocky skin as the thing. He like really likes it and enjoys the lifestyle of it.
Right. So Forge explains his backstory, and Storm is kind of just like really missing her powers. She doesn't feel like herself anymore.
Yeah.
She wants to feel the wind in her hair again. So Forge takes her horseback riding to kind of like simulate that feeling, I guess.
Yeah. And she's doing some dangerous horseback riding.
Yes. He challenges her to, like, keep up, and she rides way ahead of him and, like, almost runs off a cliff with the horse, but doesn't.
She's at times where she's, like, thinks she's flying. She's got her arms fully stretched out, going at a full gallop.
Yeah.
Right, yeah, she almost falls off a cliff, but Forge makes fun of her. He's like, aha, the goddess lives. And then they sort of, like, get back to his house, and that's where you see, like, his wall of memories where he's got pictures of X-Factor. And then if you spot closely, there's a picture of him with Dr. Adler. A character we never really met. We only saw the Mystique version of him in season one, where she was posing as Dr. Adler, who was presumably long dead. And it's all tied in with like the mutant collars that suppress powers. Dr. Adler is supposedly the one who invented them, or I don't know. It's convoluted because Mystique was lying with a lot of stuff going on. But Forge gives a little bit more backstory here, as we'll see.
Right, because Storm is kind of like, well, like, why do you want to help me so bad? Does he do like the machine?
I think she goes in the machine first. Like, invented some sort of like a magic pod for her to walk into that's going to do some advanced science stuff that's supposedly going to reverse the effects of the thing executioner used on her, the collar ray.
Right. He says something about how he needed to like not reverse the power of it, but like channel it correctly. He's done it with this machine. The machine is like a small upright column, and so like when Storm gets in it, like you think that she's gonna freak out because of claustrophobia, but she does like some deep breathing and stuff, and she doesn't.
Right, they subtly allude to that. That was a good pickup there, Sonia. I'd miss that. And you know, like it doesn't work. Like they go outside to test, and her powers are not there yet. She thinks maybe at first, like she's calling out for the wind, but it's just a bunch of birds that fly out of a tree. So, and she's sad. And then this is like, they get into more of like Forge's backstory here. He kind of admits that he was working for the, after the war, he didn't have the resources to like invent his technology. It's not easy to get the parts for like a full on cyber leg and hand. So especially, I'm guessing, in the early 80s. Mm-hmm. So he says he had to work for the government and they gave him resources. And in doing so, he inadvertently helped invent the mutant collars. And
right. He says that he's the one who came up with like the first rough like outline.
A few rough strokes that Dr. Adler used. Yeah.
And Storm is pissed. Like, she can't believe that he had a hand in developing those. She like, there's a prototype or something of mm-hmm. one on the table, and she like smashes it to the ground.
Right. And she yells at him, says, "You lied to me," you know, and like, and then he's like, "No, listen, like, actually, I love you." And she slaps him and is like, "No, I'm just here as your redemption. You're just using me as like for your own personal redemption," which is an interesting kind of like a
right.
deep she thought from like Storm.
He feels guilty about having helped create those collars. And
which he does, and she's right, but also I'm pretty sure he loves her. And what's not to love?
But he also, he hints at that he's kind of like forgiven himself. He's like, "I was in a really like dark place at that time."
Yeah.
You know, and like, given the state he was in, there was really nothing else that he could have done differently.
She has a,
how he's kind of says it.
Yeah. And she has a classic over-the-top X-Men piece of dialogue where she says, "You meant to make me a goddess. Instead, you have fashioned a fool." So
she's great.
Yeah. Poor Storm. Storm is all heart. She's all real. And I don't know. It's just sad.
So she goes out horseback riding. She likes, you know, runs out of there. But she ends up actually like falling off the side of the cliff this time.
This was a little confusing, this the sequence of events here, because at first you think it's a dream.
Right.
But it's not quite something, the reality is distorted in some way.
Right, because like when she falls off the cliff, she lands back in the house. She like falls through the roof of Forge's house.
Yeah. But then the house magically repairs itself.
Right. And like Forge runs in to see what's going on.
And he says, like, "I was just, as you were going upstairs, I was coming up to follow you." So it makes it seem that she didn't really go horseback riding.
Right.
That something happened in her mind where she got mentally, you know, hijacked. Which
right.
I think is probably the case here.
And then they're being like attacked by this demon, the adversary.
Right.
I don't really know anything about this.
It's character. From the Life Death comics. It's like one of these mystical entities that exist in the Marvel universe. Like, again, like it's part of, I don't know if it's really from the Cheyenne, you know, like a
storytelling
canon. Right, or you know, mysticism or something. But the point is, it's real. Just like every religion is real in the Marvel universe, as we've talked a million times. Norse mythology is real. The Satan is real. Mm-hmm. You know, like the Greek gods are real. They're all real. And so the same thing with the Native American spirits, they're real too. So the adversary is one of these like spirits from the Cheyenne folklore.
Right. It's like got legs of a person and it's like bigger than, like a little bigger than human size, but like wings and head of a crow.
Right.
Like dangerous bird of some kind.
And it violently bites Forge in the shoulder. And if like you see it like chomp on his shoulder, there's a bunch of blood, but then his blood turns like dark purple somehow, something weird. Yeah, it's like he's infected with poison. And Forge refers to the adversary as the demon. So you get the idea that Forge knows what's up here.
Right. And you get a little explanation that it's like a large bird that feeds on misery somehow. And now it like envelops Storm in its wings.
Yes.
And some crazy stuff is happening.
And that's how the episode ends.
Yep.
So, you know, they're touching on the comics. I mean, like, I think in the comics is a little different. Like, I think Adversary, like, fools Storm when she's going out to meet Forge. Like, maybe she thinks the Forge is the adversary, or the adversary is Forge. I don't know. There's, like, it's the story's a little bit different from the comics, from what I remember. But, they're, you know, they're loosely adapting it as they do in the X-Men animated series. And it's good. I mean, it's all good stuff. I liked all this Forge-Storm stuff. It was compelling, like, high soap opera nonsense, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. How do you feel about it? I kind of like the romance between Jubilee and Roberto a little bit more than Storm and Forge, at least in this episode.
I thought it was interesting that, like, even though these two vignettes had really nothing to do with each other, there was, like, a romance theme going through each of them. But, like, the first one resolves itself in a happy way, and the second one doesn't.
Yeah.
Well, yet. I don't know. We'll see what happens.
I also just like the focus on these particular characters. I mean, this is... Hate's a strong word. I got tired of all the Avengers side mini characters that I just don't care about. Falcon and Bucky Barnes and stuff. Like, they're boring to me. But, like, the minor characters in the X-Men universe, Sunspot, Jubilee, Forge, Like those are characters I actually am like really like want to like get in their business and like know about their lives. I find their mystery like really interesting, and all the like various uniqueness of their backstory is like incredibly compelling. Mm-hmm. Versus like the Avengers world, which I find like very like cookie cutter and dry and boring, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
So many of the Avengers, they're just all like militant operatives in some level, you know? Mm-hmm. Like they're all like spies or super soldiers or just like soldiers of different stripes. Whereas, you know, the X-Men, they're more closer to people in a weird, you know what I'm saying? Like I get that Forge was himself a former soldier too, but
right.
I don't know. It's just more interesting to me. This is
they're more complex characters, right. More like rich inner lives that mm-hmm. were told about anyway.
Yes.
You know? It looks like on the episode list, because I was wondering, like, is the next episode called Motendo Life Death or like what?
Yeah.
It looks like next week we're going to get a different storyline called Remember It, mm-hmm. where Genosha prepares to join the UN.
Okay. And then, oh, yeah, they hinted, we didn't mention that in the beginning of the episode, they said that Scott and Jean were at the UN doing some politics.
Right. That's cool. And then the week after that, we get back to Life Death Part 2.
Okay. All right. So they're going to take a break in the Stormforge thing.
Right. So,
I mean, you know, in a way, it's like it's similar to what we got in season 2 of the X-Men, where you had the whole running story of Magneto and Professor X in the Savage Land mm-hmm. in almost every episode until the X-Men found them.
Right.
And so maybe they're doing that just a little bit here with Stormforge, where it's just going to be this running backstory that like is like an undercurrent of...
Again, it's like a soap opera.
Yeah. Yeah, it's great.
It's great.
I love it. The ultimate comic soap opera, the X-Men animated, X-Men 97 animated team understands this. They're doing a great job. Again, it's like it wasn't the most heavy-hitting episode compared to the first three, but just fully enjoyable as, like, for what it is, just being in the world, being with these characters, I had a blast.
Visually, it was great. I also liked that they gave us, like, the Motendo storyline real quick, just to, like, establish that relationship between Jubilee and Sunspot. And, like, they didn't worry about, like, oh, we have to stretch it into a full half-hour episode.
They didn't do a full-up just recreation of the Mojo episodes we've seen before.
Right.
I thought that's what it was
like,
going to be.
All the stories sit side by side, and I really like that they didn't just, like, scrap it because it wasn't exactly to the specifications of the new show.
I thought for sure the X-Men were going to have to, like, find the console in her room and go in there and rescue her and, you know, get involved, and it'd be, like, a bigger action sequence. Yeah. But
she saved herself.
Yeah, it was more fun this way. So the show continues to impress. I'm impressed.
Yeah, me too. This was great.
It was a lot of fun. We watched it early this morning. We're recording early in the morning. And we might be doing that next week too for various life reasons. Mm-hmm. No new reason to get into. But sometimes it's easier to record in the morning on a work day than it is late at night. Sonia, until next week.
Until next week.
Good night.
Bye.